First of all, I would like to reserve 5 minutes in my rebuttal. Good morning, Judge Fox, Judge Jones, and Judge Navarro, and students of Aurora Central High School, and the public. It is apropos that this case is being heard before the public today, for this case is not only important, has great importance for my clients, but this court's ruling will have very severe consequences for the rights of all of us. For the essence of this case is the right of the public to know the actions of their government, to know the true facts concerning government agents and their actors, and to be able to hold them accountable. The genesis of this case started right nearby this high school at Colfax and Peoria, when my clients and their the widow and the children of Juan Contreras, their husband was and father was killed by an Aurora police officer in front of the Family Dollar store at Colfax and Peoria. As in almost all police departments throughout the state of Colorado, the police department conducted their own investigation about this killing concerning one of their own police officers. They sealed off the area, they interviewed witnesses, this was a very public shooting at a very public place at Colfax and Peoria at 7:38 p.m. on a Saturday afternoon in July. And they denied access to the area by anyone, including my client, who had learned about this incident from a passerby, because the passerby told her that her husband's vehicle was parked there and there was a lot of police officers there. So she went to there and tried to find out what had happened. And the police, she wanted to find out if her husband was alive or dead. She saw the car there, all these police officers, and the police told her that to leave or she would be arrested. My client didn't hear anything else, but within a few days, the police department issued a press release that was favorable to the police department and indicated in this press release that Mr. Contreras was shot and killed by an Aurora police officer, an unidentified Aurora police officer, for requesting $50 for a set of lost keys in a nearby parking lot. This is the entire information that was available at that time, and it was very favorable to the police because they said that Mr. Contreras produced a knife. And they
counsel, at this point, are there any records that have not been disclosed to your client?
As a result of filing a civil rights lawsuit, I don't believe there are. Not as a result of getting information in regard to this Criminal Justice Records Act. But as a result of filing that civil rights lawsuit that we had to file because there's time limitations, and as the court knows, there's obligations upon counsel to be due diligence under Rule 11 of the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure to know whether you have a proper case. The issue in this case are simple and direct. They're not complicated. Whether the government, through a municipal police department, when they kill a man, is the public, including the man's wife and children, entitled to know how, why, and who killed him promptly, as required by the laws? Now, procedurally, it'll take some time, but I know the court is well aware of probably the procedures in this case. We filed a records request on promptly in regard to this case, after informally contacting the chief of police by telephone, email, and saying, could you please tell us what happened? My client would like to know. No response. A letter was sent, August 9th. That letter then was given by the chief of police, by their representative, and contacted me as their counsel and said, please send a formal request to our records custodian, Mr. Guzman. We did that. After that, he responded finally on August 30th. August 30th, he responds and says, we can't give you this information. We will not release this information because it is not in the public interest. And recite the provisions of the statute. Nothing more.
Counsel, how is this case any different from the Johnson versus Department of Corrections case, where a division of this court concluded that the release of records was not required while there was an ongoing investigation. Here, that same rationale was used to initially deny access. So how do you distinguish Johnson versus Department of Corrections?
This case is quite different than Johnson versus Department of Corrections. First of all, there was no explanation that this was an ongoing investigation. There was nothing. The city of Aurora ignored this request, admittedly, didn't say what was going on. There was no way for plaintiffs, for us to know if there was an investigation or there wasn't an investigation. Now, you may assume that, but the law doesn't say that we have to assume it. The law says the city of Aurora needed to respond to that letter and they failed. They violated the law. They admittedly violated the law. There was no... And during different periods of time, Judge, there were different periods of when it could be construed whether there was an investigation. There was an investigation. At the hearing held in this, in regard to this case, the investigation had been completed apparently by September 11th by the Aurora Police Department and turned it over to the District Attorney's Office. That is a complete and separate different agency. That investigation, they had get completely done with by the Aurora Police Department. So, what about release of the records then? The other issue for the court in this instance is whether or not all records should have been denied access. In fact, totally everything was denied. Instead of redacting or doing a spreadsheet and saying these records are need to be withheld, these records need to be redacted, we need to withhold some information here. What happened in this case is the complete abdication of the decision by the records custodian for whether or not these records should be released was there was a complete abdication by the records custodian, and he testified at the hearing that he did not release the records because the police told him not to do so. That's why he didn't release the records. The same police department that shot and killed Mr. Contreras, one of their officers, makes the decision, we're not going to give you these records. This is the type of thing in which we have a complete totalitarian decision made by our government, those that are empowered to use deadly force, make the decision whether or not the people have a right to know basic information about this shooting and killing. Sorry, Judge.
That's all right, Mr. Padilla. As I understand in answer to a previous question, you've now received all the records that you wanted. So today, what relief are you asking us to give? I mean, you're not asking us to order anyone to turn over records, are you?
I believe we have all the records. We're still in discovery stage in this case. In fact, the case has been stayed at the present time, but we're still in discovery stage. I don't know, because there was never on May 18th, while the court was considering our request, it had had the hearing on April 17th and 2012, May 18th, the city attorney's office delivered the major crime unit file. That didn't respond to all our requests, because we asked for, you know, halo cameras, we asked for videos, we asked for all witness statements, and from what we learned, so there was things that were absolutely missing at that time, but they gave us the investigative body, the records. So at this time, to answer the court's question, what am I asking the court to do? We are asking this court to tell the city of Aurora that they have to abide by the laws. That they have to, they are required under the law to give explanation, and it is not unbridled discretion they have to deny records to the public. When they use the awesome power given to police officers, and in the state of Colorado, in our nation, yes, police officers can use deadly force and they can kill somebody under certain circumstances. And they have, and we are asking this court to say, the city of Aurora, you violated the law, You need to give this information promptly and contemporaneously. You can't wait and give this information when it's convenient or at your own caprice or whim, or you can't wait until you've covered up all the facts and you've made the investigation stale, that there are no witnesses available. This is a public shooting in a very public place, and we have transits and buses and people coming and going. And they denied all that information to the plaintiff. And that's what this law is about. That's what we're asking is you to say, tell them that they violated the law, and to pay my client's fees and costs and expenses and a penalty to the city of Aurora for violating the law. That was one way they violated the law. There's several other.
Council, to the extent that you're requesting an explanation for why they delayed for as long as they delayed, didn't your client get that explanation at the hearing in front of the district court?
That hearing was 9 months later, Judge. Justice delayed is justice denied. 9 months, you're sitting there. I asked this court, if this was your spouse, your father and mother, that goes off on a Saturday afternoon and goes to the store and gets shot and killed by a police officer, and you say, oh my God, what happened? Where? How? Who did this? And you're told, hey, just wait, we'll tell you what happened. You just sit there and wait, and you don't have any right to know what happened, and we're not even going to give you our explanation for not telling you what happened, and we're not going to do the balancing test required under the statute. And they didn't do the balancing test. They said they conducted that at the hearing also, Judge. The bootstrap argument. They can't do a balancing test after the fact, as they claim that they did at this hearing.
But counsel, aren't you effectively asking this court to redo that, the custodian's balancing test, and then find fault in their evaluation of whether to release the records and when to release them? That is something that we're not allowed to do on an abuse of discretion standard. We're not allowed to either second-guess the district court or second-guess the custodian of records. So what gives us authority to second-guess that decision?
I would ask this court to scour the record. Scour that record and see where the custodian did the balancing test in the city of Aurora. They did not. They never did it. It's required under the statute. I'm asking you then to tell them to follow the law. They didn't do any balancing test. I'm not the custodian of the records merely said, we're not giving you the records because it's not in the public interest. What actually is in the public interest in this case, it's crystal clear that what's in the public interest, Judge, is to give the records. It is not in the public interest to deny access to the records. And you have the chief of police at the hearing come up with this absurd explanation that when cases are more public, they have more publicity, and the press wants to know about it, and the people want to know about it, that's even more reason that the police department doesn't release the records. And the chief of police said in this case, he blanketly they deny all access to records. This is a dangerous precedent for a democracy. It is abhorrent in a free and democratic society that the government says, when the press wants to know about it, when the public wants to know about a public shooting and killing, that's exactly when we don't release it, because we're worried about that. We want to protect one of our own police officers. So was there a balancing test? No, I'm not asking you, court, to redo the balancing test. I'm telling you to tell the city of Aurora to conduct a proper balancing test. And when they didn't do it, they violated the law. The law is clear. They violated it. And on at least 5 occasions. I have them listed here for you. Sorry, ma'am. I feel passionate about this, Judge, because this is a very, very important, and I'm asking you not to rule on the niceties of certain language in the Criminal Justice Record Act alone, even though they've clearly violated it. But this is a due process, equal protection, and fundamental right of citizens. I ask you to look deep in your own hearts and say, hey, if this happened to me, would you be entitled to it? Well, you're a judge of the Colorado Court of Appeals. The chief's going to sit down with you and explain things to you. But a Mexican man killed by a white police officer and a poor Mexican woman coming forth and asking for this information,
Mr. Padilla,
they tell her to go away.
Mr. Padilla, you're out of time.
Thank
you're 15 minutes up. Thank you.
Well, I don't have any time for reserve.
No, you did not reserve any time.
Oh, I did. I said at the beginning I would.
Yeah, but it didn't work out that way. Okay, now we'll hear from counsel for the appellee.
Good morning, Your Honors. Can you hear me? Martha Fitzgerald, number 14078, on behalf of Appellee City of Aurora, and Juan Guzman, with me at council table, Carrie Johnson, number 41596. First, I would like to say to all assembled here, it is precisely because we do not live in a totalitarian society, but rather because we follow the rule of law in this country, that citizens such as Ms. Madrigal have a full, fair, and open opportunity to challenge the actions or the inactions of government, and that is why we are here today. In that context, we would like to preface our argument by saying that everyone should be assured that the City of Aurora takes its responsibilities to the public very seriously, and in conjunction with that, the City does not dispute that openness in the law enforcement process is in the public interest. In fact, the city and its leaders strongly support the proposition that one of the bedrock tenets of a free society is the open and free exchange between government and the public. But the information exchange cannot always be complete and immediate, especially in the criminal investigation context. And that usually means that in a criminal investigatory process, materials which are part of the investigatory record and in the context of an ongoing investigation will not be released until that investigation is complete.
Ms. Fitzgerald, can I ask you a question? Who do you think was the records custodian in this case?
Your Honor, Mr. Guzman was the representative at the city clerk's office who was the liaison to the public for receipt of CORA, Colorado Open Records Act, and CCJRA. Records request, but the actual official custodian is Chief Oates of the Aurora Police Department, and he has a liaison there, Captain Fran Gomez, who coordinates with the clerk's office.
Counsel, how is it that a 9-month delay explaining why it should not be released to citizens? How is that consistent with the city
Thank you, Your Honor. First of all, the first delay, the letter that was supposedly that was written on September 1st by Mr. Padilla in behalf of Ms. Madrigal was sent September 1st. The follow-up letter, that is, after the denial of the CCJRA records request, and 72 hours after that time, at any moment, Mr. Padilla could have filed a complaint for an order to show cause, could have picked up the phone, could have emailed, could have called city attorney, could have called the city clerk, any of those things to avoid having a 4-month delay between September 1, 2011, when the follow-up letter was sent, until January 4th, 2012, when he filed his complaint. So 4 months there, it's not completely obviously the fault of appellant, but could have been mitigated the fact that this did fall through the cracks. The overriding policy, however, is the same for the delay, which is that an ongoing criminal investigation pursuant to the statute and under the case law is a situation in which records cannot be disclosed. Now, when the
Ms. Fitzgerald, just to make clear, I'm not sure I heard your answer very clearly to Judge Fox's question. Are you acknowledging the city violated Subsection 6 by not responding to the September 2011 letter?
Yes, Your Honor, the record is clear.
Because the statute does not require the record requester to follow up and call the city to please ask the city to please comply with the law. The city had an obligation to do so without any follow-up questioning, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
So the city violated that subsection.
Yes, Your Honor.
And shouldn't the appellant have some remedy for that?
Yes, Your Honor, the appellant should have some remedy for that, but as the district court made clear in its opinion, the appellant would not have been entitled to the records at any point up until the finishing or the conclusion of the investigation by the grand jury at any rate.
So what is the remedy then that you think the appellant should have? Since I thought you conceded they should have one.
Well, Your Honor, first of all, the $25 a day remedy is off the table because the records that were denied were not records of official action. And that was admitted by the appellant in her opening brief at page 14. The attorney fees and costs issue that underlying the district court found that was not an abuse of discretion, that it was not an arbitrary and capricious act by the city in its key denial of the productions of the records at the time the open records request was received. And that is the reason that Judge Pratt decided that he would not impose sanctions and attorney fees on the city.
Well, counsel, why isn't the city's failure to respond to the request for an explanation, as it is statutorily required to do, not a per se arbitrary and capricious action?
Your Honor, hearing the testimony as the district court did in its completeness, which was very extensive, the court decided, and it is Your Honor's duty to decide whether that was an arbitrary decision, that on the record as a whole and given the testimony as a whole, that the first denial of production of the records was not arbitrary and capricious. The failure to respond to the follow-up argument is not a per se, or the follow-up letter is not a per se violation, because Mr. Guzman, in his original letter to appellants, did clearly cite to the statute, which is 2472.305.5, which provides that in records of investigations conducted by intelligence, information, or security procedures, are files compiled by other for law enforcement purposes are statutorily, presumptively not disclosable until the investigation is complete. May I continue?
Well, I'm not sure you answered my question. Okay, the question is regarding the request for an explanation, not the request for records initially. The request for an explanation to which the city did not respond at all. What I'm having a little difficulty with is understanding how a failure to respond at all is not per se arbitrary and capricious when there is a statutory obligation to respond with some explanation.
Your Honor, pursuant to the case law, the articulation of the reason may be performed either in the response or at the show cause hearing, and that is under Romero 307 P. 2nd and 120 and Freedom Colorado 196 P. 3rd at 902. In other words, the articulation for the rationale for the refusal to respond can be presented either in the response or in the show cause hearing. And that's what happened.
So are you suggesting that those cases you cited authorize the city to ignore the request under subsection 6?
The city regrets, obviously, that it did not provide the response on September 1st or within 72 hours of September 1st, 2011.
I think that's a no. The cases you cited do not authorize the city to fail to respond to a request under subsection 6.
No, they do not authorize the city for the failure to fail to respond, but they do allow the district court to probe into the articulation of the rationale for the failure to respond or the failure to produce records of an ongoing investigation at the show cause hearing. So the city did respond.
So to take it one step further, your position would be the city has an obligation to respond within 72 hours, and it could respond by saying, we're not going to tell you. And that would be sufficient.
No, Your Honor. The city would have to articulate its reasoning. Now,
well, I thought you just said it could do it either in that response letter or at a subsequent hearing.
Yes, Your Honor. The city could do it in the response letter or in a subsequent hearing.
Well, when you say or, it means that they don't have to do it the first time, but then you just said they do have to do it the first time.
Your Honor, the city does not dispute that it should have responded to the follow-up letter asking for the definition of in the public interest. It should have done that. However, the city and the district court found was justified in that finding, in that failure, not justified, but it was understandable, and it wasn't conscious, and it wasn't intentional. And the city did believe that the open records request, the CCJRA request, had been closed. They had no indication it hadn't been closed. If at any moment in that four-month period between September 1st and January 4th, there had been any kind of further inquiry, the city would have articulated its rationale. It would never say we don't have to tell you why. However, reference to the statute obviously was a clue to this very experienced counsel, as he stated in the transcript below, that this was a reference to an ongoing criminal investigation. And that's why the records were denied originally.
Well, we understand what your reasoning is after the fact. What I'm trying to get to here is the issue of sanctions, really, which for the failure to respond as is statutorily required. Now, it seems to me that what the district court essentially said was, with all due respect, that the incompetence by the department rendered this not arbitrary and capricious. I'm wondering why department incompetence isn't per se arbitrary and capricious.
Are you speaking of the Aurora Police Department?
I'm speaking of whoever had the obligation to respond to this request, and it, as was said, it fell through the cracks. Nobody dealt with it as they should have. And I know you've apologized, and I know there was a witness at the hearing who apologized, but why isn't that sort of, again, with all due respect, incompetence per se arbitrary and capricious? Don't we have a right to expect more?
Yes, Your Honor, we have a right to expect responses to our inquiries to the government. What the lower court focused on, however, was that despite the fact that there was a failure to respond to the follow-up letter, that the continuing nature of the investigation, as evidenced by the testimony from Arapahoe District Attorney's Office, demonstrated that from the day of the shooting through the date of the return of no true bill by the grand jury, there was a continuing and ongoing investigation. And the fact is that at the show cause hearing, the balancing test was clearly articulated by Chief Oates, Ms. Gomez, and by Mr. Jones. So even if, say on September 13th, Mr. Padilla had called the city attorney or called the clerk and say, hey, you haven't responded to my letter yet, what is happening? At that point, the articulation would have been the same as it was in the show cause hearing. And the appellant still would not have been permitted to have access to the ongoing criminal investigation files.
So, counsel, if I can restate your point to make sure I understand it, and please correct me if I misstate it. You're saying that because the denial of the records was at all times appropriate, therefore the trial court could not impose any sort of sanction on the city for failing to respond to the request for an explanation? Is that right?
I'm saying, Your Honor, that Your Honor must review the actions of the trial court in its entirety and in complete perspective with the testimony that it received from all people, and understand that standard of review is abuse of discretion for its conclusion that the records would not have been disclosed at any rate throughout the whole period, throughout the whole investigatory period.
I think your answer to my question was yes. Because the custodian was justified in not releasing the records, the trial court cannot impose sanctions for the failure to respond to the request under subsection 6. Is that right?
Well, certainly, Your Honor, the trial court cannot oppose the $25 a day sanctions because it's not a record of official action. The trial court determined, again, it could it have imposed sanctions? Is that your question? Yes, it could have. But it determined not.
So you think the trial court did have authority to impose sanctions?
To impose attorney.
And what's your source of authority or your source of law for that proposition?
That would be 305-7, Your Honor.
And you think number 7 allows the district court to authorize sanctions even when the district court finds the denial of inspection was proper?
Your Honor, it is arguable that subsection 7 would allow the district court to impose costs and attorney fees, not the $25 a day fine.
Please argue it. I want to hear why that's the case under the plain language of the statute.
upon finding that the denial of inspection of a record of official action was arbitrary or capricious, the court may also order the custodian personally. It may order the custodian to pay applicant's court costs and attorney fees in an amount to be determined.
But isn't it the very first clause in that sentence, unless the court finds the denial was proper?
Yes, Your Honor, but obviously the court did have discretion to impose attorney fees and costs.
Okay, thank you.
Your Honor, I have 20 seconds left and have not presented the crux of my argument. However, I will state that the record is replete with evidence that demonstrates that the city did, in fact, conduct an appropriate balancing test. It's inherent in the statute. It's well supported by the case law that no ongoing criminal investigation records can be disclosed.
Thank you, counsel. That concludes the argument in Madrigal versus Guzman.